This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Ned Sharpless's cancer research lab is full of luminescent mice. Yes, mice that glow. The mice have been given the gene that makes the firefly light up. And in the mouse, that glow brightens with age and at early signs of cancer. Ned's mice are changing the way we think about aging, and they're also allowing us to experiment with treatments during very early stages of cancer. Ned Sharpless is a professor of medicine and genetics at the Lineberger Comprehensive Cancer Center, and he is on our program today. Welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Yeah, glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
All right, I'll ask the why in a minute, but first the how. How do you get mice to glow?
So it's a genetic engineering trick. Making knock-in and knock-out mice is a several-decade-old technology now, and One places the gene of interest, in this case, this luciferase gene, which fireflies make, under the control of your favorite part of the genome. In our case, this gene called P16, which is a gene that's involved in cancer and a cellular senescence, which is a specific thing that cells do to not get turned to cancer. And so we placed, through standard techniques, the luciferase gene in just the right place and showed that it worked in just the right way. And now the mice get glow when they get older.
So tell us more about P16 and senescence, S-E-N. So it might be rooted in the word that gives us senility and senior, perhaps.
Right. So senescence, in common parlance, means having to do with being old or related to agedness. But in the sense that cell biologists use it, they're really talking about the specific thing that damaged cells do. This was discovered 50 years ago by a guy named Leonard Hayflick, who noticed that if you grow cells in culture, the right kind of cells anyway, for too long, they'll stop dividing and they growth arrest permanently. And Dr. Hayflick, when he discovered this, said that sort of predicted sort of two things. He thought maybe this thing that he called senescence, this permanent growth arrest, would be important at aging, because if your cells didn't divide as you got older, then that might contribute to the aging phenotype, the changes that occur with getting old. And similarly, he wondered if this senescence thing might have something to do with cancer, because he thought if cells stopped dividing, they couldn't become malignant. And he turned out to be right on both counts, but it took sort of 50 years to work that out. So it's now, I think, reasonably well understood that senescent cells, and again, I mean these permanently arrested specific kind of cells, that they accumulate as you get older. And that's really important, because senescence is good in that it prevents you from getting malignancy. So it prevents cancer. But in doing that, it also is associated with the aging process.
So let me, and what happens here, and stop me if I'm wrong, that this P16 gene is something that will trigger senescence if it finds that perhaps this little line of cells over here in this tissue is going bad. And we do not want this line to continue. And so what we're going to do is speed up or trigger senescence in them. You can go so far, and then you're timing out.
Right. So P16 has sort of no function in healthy normal mice, and it's completely off in young animals. It's real. If you make mice that lack P16, what happens to them is they look fine, they act fine, they're indistinguishable from other mice until they die of cancer at a young age. So its job is really to prevent malignancy. And what happens is somehow as a tumor starts to form, as cancer cells start to develop, The cells growing in the nascent tumor ball know that they're growing improperly, and they activate the P16 mechanism, and that prevents the tumor from developing. And that happens every day. We know, for instance, that the mutations that cause cancer happen all the time, even in very young people. But yet most of us don't develop cancer for decades. So these mechanisms are very, very efficient. They almost always work. But when they fail, that's when malignancy actually develops.
Go ahead. And P16 is what triggers this.
Right. And P16 is one of a few actually important cellular defense mechanisms against cancer. And what's nice about P16 for the purposes of this study is that when it goes from being completely off to expressed at super high levels. So it makes a very good reporter of the senescence process. There are a lot of genes that get activated with senescence, but this one gets activated, a several log scale. I mean, it really comes on. And so that allows if you put a luciferase gene under control of this promoter, it goes from not glowing at all to glowing very, very brightly in the cell.
So now you know it's been activated, because you're going to make that place in the mouse glow. Now, does this glow, by the way, to the naked eye, or do you need equipment to see it?
You could see it with the naked eye. So you have to give a substrate. So the luciferase is the enzyme, and then it acts upon a luciferin, which you give the mice an injection of this, and they'll glow for about 20 minutes after the injection. Because we want to quantitate it, because we want to compare mice to each other and to other animals, we actually measure it with a very special super-cooled camera that's very sensitive. That also allows us to measure even very low levels of light that wouldn't be detectable by the naked eye. But if an animal's really glowing brightly, you could see it with the naked eye.
So does this mean then that when you see a little glow, you might have a cancer beginning to develop? Is this the implication here?
Right. So it turns out the mice work unexpectedly well for that purpose. That wasn't exactly why we made the mouse. It was sort of a collateral benefit of the studies. But when a tumor starts to form, again, somehow the cells in that tumor know that they're in a bad place, and they activate this locus very briskly. And so before the tumor is detectable by any other sort of method, PET scans or inspection or blood tests we do for cancer, any of those things, we can see these animals glowing at the spot they're going to get cancer, sometimes as many as 100 days prior to the tumor developing. So it's very useful if you want to study cancer at an early stage. And similarly, if you want to see a tumor grow and then shrink because you're giving some cancer therapy, you know, you're trying to cure the cancer in the mice, you can watch the glow come and go and see if your therapy is working.
And when you talk about senescence, is this the phenomenon that was not present in that famous cell line of Henrietta Lacks? Is that part of
right.
the same
so
story?
All immortal cell lines have defeated the senescence mechanism somehow. And the HeLa cells, or Henrietta Lacks cells, make specific viral proteins that kill off a gene called RB, which is what P16 activates. So that's all cancer cells have figured out how to get rid of the P16 mechanism and the P53 mechanism, those two sort of archetypal genes of senescence.
Wow, so this is an arms race when it comes to cancer. We figured out a way to detect it and stop it. It's defeated the defense. So then this has implications for aging. Tell us about that.
Right. So as I said, it's a good thing when a cell senesces, when a damaged, improperly growing cell senesces, because that means it doesn't become a malignancy. And if we didn't have the senescence machinery, we'd all die of cancer pretty soon. So the fact that they're there and working is beneficial. But at the same time, these senescent cells, some of them stick around for a long time, maybe forever, the rest of your lifespan. And they persist and they take up space. And they don't do anything. They can't divide. So whatever normal beneficial function the cell had, they can't do anymore. So if they were a lymphocyte, they can't make daughter lymphocytes, for example. And lastly, they release probably hormones, cytokines that are associated with inflammation. So, one or two of these cells is not bad. But over a lifetime, if you accumulate a lot of these cells, we think that's an important determinant of aging. And that's why a lot of the common things that are associated with aging occur as you get old, because of the accumulation of these senescent cells, both crowding out the good cells and making these hormones that are bad and sort of pro-aging.
Sounds like then that might be sort of part of what's going on with arthritis then, perhaps.
Right, right. Many of these diseases of chronic inflammation, things like atherosclerosis, type 2 diabetes, disorders of immunity, and certain kinds of arthritis, we think a lot of these aging-related sequelae are in part related to senescence. There's actually genetic proof of this in a way. If you look at thousands or millions of patients and look at what genes are associated with old age phenotypes, the machinery of senescence comes out of those studies reproducibly. So P16 in particular has been implicated through unbiased genome-wide studies with a lot of common diseases of aging, including cancer, but also things like diabetes and atherosclerosis.
Wait, is senescence why we die? I mean, that's part of the mechanism that allows us to finally leave this planet.
That's controversial. I mean, I think that aging turns out to be very complex. And some aging is probably associated with senescence, and other aspects of aging are clearly not associated with senescence. We're just not very good at telling which are which. The example I used to give was depression in the elderly. Depression is a very common thing with old age. And that seemed to be a kind of brain dysfunction that I would have predicted had nothing to do with senescence. And a bunch of psychiatrists at Harvard now tell me I'm wrong. And they think that even that. So, I've given up. I no longer try and predict which phenotypes of aging are related to replicative failure, senescence, and which ones are related to other aspects of aging. But there are a bunch of processes that contribute to aging, but we now believe senescence to be a particularly important one.
And it also gives us insight into something that you, I think, developed an insight out of these experiments about the difference between chronological aging and molecular aging. So tell us about that.
Right. So, as a physician, I can tell you there are a lot of things we do to patients based on this thing, the driver's license test. How old you are determines whether you're considered fit enough to get a certain type of surgery, or, you know, chemotherapy for your breast cancer, or radiation therapy for other kinds of tumors. And we make these decisions a lot of times because we think that young patients are fitter and old patients are less fit. And in older patients, the toxicity of the therapy may be so great that it's not worth doing. So that's the logic. And that decision is made in hospitals every day, 1,000 times a day. And the driver's license test is useful, and all physicians use it, but it's not perfect. We all know, you know, the 80-year-old who's physiologically 50, you know, who's jogging the Boston Marathon and is sharp as a tack, and then the 50-year-old who's physiologically 80, who's not jogging the Boston Marathon and is not sharp as a tack. So, you know, sorting those people out with a test that's better than just the driver's license test is really a goal of my lab and others, because we think that if you could decide what to do in patients based on their molecular age or their physiologic age as opposed to their chronologic age, then we do a better job of treating them.
Is there any thought to perish the thought, disabling senescence? In other words, does this lead to longevity, immortality? Well, let me speculate wildly here.
Well, so I actually don't think it's so wild. There are serious efforts in this regard. I can tell you, for example, when these genome-wide studies happened, implicating P16 with type 2 diabetes, my phone rang a lot. You know, that's something that we published on, and suddenly 40 different pharma companies called me and asked me, how do we drug senescence? How do we prevent cells from senescing? And I explained to them that you could maybe do that, but would you want to do that? Because the good news is you might not get type 2 diabetes, but the bad news is you might get more pancreatic cancer, and which is worse. You know, so I think that there's this trade-off between senescence, its beneficial function of preventing cancer, and its bad function of causing aging. There are very serious scientists now who hope to treat or maybe even reverse aging by clearing senescent cells. So they have this idea that if you stimulate the immune system to eat all the senescent cells, or if you find a drug that will specifically kill senescent cells, that you can make old organisms younger. And that's not really science fiction. I mean, that's getting to a stage now where that'll be testable in the lab in the next year or two, and I think we'll know the answer soon.
Yeah, but that sounds to me like you're removing the sort of pathological side effects of accumulating these cells versus letting kind of nature take its course and letting us, you know, leave.
Right. So there's sort of three approaches to treating senescence. One is to prevent it from happening, and that's sort of the hope of the wellness, you know, researchers of, you know, more antioxidants or more resveratrol, or, you know, there is something you can eat or do that will prevent senescence from occurring. And I think that's a really interesting area. The toxicology of aging is something we just don't understand. Another approach would be to try and just replace sick and damaged cells through regenerative medicine. You know, give some stem cells, you know, some new liver or cartilage or whatever, and cure it that way. And then the third approach is the one we were discussing, of trying to actually get rid of the senescent cells that accumulate by some specific, immune approach or small molecule approach. And I think all three ideas have merit. And people are working very hard on all three. The first one's particularly attractive to me. I mean, I don't want to get a stem cell transplant, and I don't want to have my immune system eat all my senescent cells. I would like to be able to just jog more and have more bee pollen or whatever and not age. But, you know, we have to figure out what it is.
This is are there implications and applications for humans? Can I get the firefly gene and then light up as a diagnostic and just run around with it?
Yeah, you can't get the firefly gene because we would have to make a genetically engineered human, and that's problematic for a lot of reasons. In one in particular, even if you were interested in doing that, it would probably be a bad idea because you have to disable one of the alleles of the locus. So you have to make one of your two copies of P16 not work.
And that does help find it. Yeah,
that'd be bad.
Want that. Okay.
But the other reason, but there is something you can do in people, which we have been doing now in probably approaching 1,000 patients at the University of North Carolina, which is you can measure P16 expression in cells that are easy to get. It turns out the cells that are easy to get from people that express a lot of P16 are T cells that float around in the peripheral blood. They fight infection. When they don't work so well, you get the infections that are associated with old age, like tuberculosis and other things like that. And so we think that measuring a P16 expression in T cells tells you something about the molecular age of the person. We're hoping that T cell P16 can be used as a surrogate for the entire organism. And we've been studying this, in people now, both healthy people and people with cancer, for quite some time. So, for example, we've shown that P16 in T cells goes up a lot with aging. So it's quite low when you're young, and it increases exponentially when you get older, not linearly, but actually exponentially, which is an interesting finding. We've shown that if you smoke a lot, your P16 goes up higher at any age. we've shown that if you exercise, your P16 is lower for a given age. So and we've shown that those two effects are independent, that smoking is bad even if you do or don't exercise, and exercise is good even if you do or don't smoke. So now we're interested in understanding, are there certain foods or other things that one can do that are associated with slower or more rapid aging? And that's why this mouse is so important, because there are a lot of things you can't do. You can't randomize humans to exercise, right? Because we'll cheat. You know, half of us who, you know, we'll be told we're supposed to exercise and we won't anyway, right? And you have to do that for decades. Whereas a mouse study can be done in a year or two, and you can easily randomize mice to these sorts of exposures that are hard to do in humans.
And mice are fundamentally more honest. Let's face it.
They don't lie.
Well, right. And the interesting thing, too, is that you are working with a mammal that has a little longer lifespan, so you can study these things over time.
Right. I think that, a lot of aging research has been done in flies and worms, you know, things with a very short lifespan, and that research has been very fruitful. I mean, I think we've learned a lot from those sorts of model organisms, but they're not mammals. And for example, one thing they don't really do is have senescence. So the whole topic of senescence is very hard to study in lower organisms. We think that, all experimental systems are a trade-off, but the mice have a lot to offer for aging research, because their lifespan is long enough that it's informative, but it's not so long that it's intractable.
You've said that this is interesting for cancer research, but sort of fabulously interesting in the research on aging. Talk about the where we are in the development of both of those.
Right. So I'm an oncologist by training. I started out in science trying to cure cancer, and that's still my day job. But in the process of doing that, I've sort of been dragged into aging research, because this thing, senescence, that we work on as an anti-cancer mechanism turns out to be so important in aging, and it really becomes impossible to study one and not the other. And that's been really a lot of fun working in both fields, because they're very different. You know, aging is not as well understood as cancer. If you go to the cancer meetings, you know, we sort of have an idea of how cancer works. It's a mutation in this gene plus a loss of this gene plus a maybe change in the epigenetic state of the cell, and boom, you've got cancer. And this treatment is going to work, but it's not perfect. We need to improve it. And so the questions in cancer research have become very specific. Whereas in aging research, you'll go to the meetings and some guy from Russia will stand up and he looks like Beethoven. He's got hair streaming everywhere. And, you know, he says in some almost unintelligible accent that it's all about selenium. And if we just had more selenium, we wouldn't age. And you know, nobody really can tell him why he's wrong. I suspect he's wrong. But, you know, our understanding is so poor that it could be all about red wine or selenium or you know, one of these pet theories that people have. And so, having worked in both areas, it's really vibrant, because I think, aging is a little frustrating that it's been so hard to make progress, although I think we are making tremendous progress now. Whereas cancer, it sometimes feels like it's almost too well understood from a scientific point of view. That's not to say cancer is well understood, but it's just the questions feel very, very different as a scientist who works in both areas. So it's been really gratifying now to produce a reagent that I think will have implications for both fields. You know, it's a great cancer reagent, because you can use it to study the progression of cancer and the development of cancer, and it works in almost every model of cancer we've tested in. It has worked in every model of cancer we've tested in. So it's very generic reagent. So it'll work for colon cancer researchers or lung cancer researchers. But then at the same time, it also has this use for aging research, and particularly to study the toxicology of aging, which I think is a really interesting thing. You know, think about it. There are these molecules that we know are clearly carcinogens, like cigarette smoke and certain kinds of DNA damaging agents. But I think with this mouse, we can start to identify gerontogens, you know, compounds that promote aging that are not necessarily carcinogens, but are still bad things in the environment that we wouldn't want to be exposed to. And so I think that those things clearly exist. Gerontogens are real things, but we've only identified a few, cigarette smoking being one. But I think there are probably a lot more, and this animal, I hope, will help delineate those.
Are you working on that in particular, on practical applications?
Very much so, yes. So I have one student in my lab who's a toxicologist who is really inventing the field of sort of toxicology and senescence using this allele, and she's been rattling through a bunch of noxious things, and it's been tremendously interesting. You know, some things that we thought would promote aging haven't really done much, and other things that we didn't think were that terrible are quite active at inducing senescence in vivo. So it's been counterintuitive and a lot of fun, and it turns out to be not that hard with this allele. You know, these experiments would be very difficult doing it the old-fashioned way, but using this reagent, it's they're very doable.
Fascinating stuff. Ned, thanks so much for being on the program.
Thank you for having me.
Ned Sharpless, Professor of Medicine and Genetics at the Leinberger Comprehensive Cancer Center and the Deputy Cancer Center Director at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Coming up next, the duo All Your Science as we wrap up Science Week on the State of Things. Stay tuned.